On my journey, I was really struggling with addiction, really struggling to stop, and that includes everything that comes with addiction, right? Doing stuff on the streets, getting myself in trouble with the law, and getting really lost in my life.
This is TBI, Talking Brain Injury from Brain Injury Association of Colorado. I'm your host, Phil, a four-time recipient of brain injuries I don't even remember, plus a whole bunch I kind of do remember. This week's guest is Jack Storti. In 2009, at the lowest of his low, he nearly died of overdose.
I sort of wake up a few days later learning that, you know, this catastrophic thing happened. I had seizures that caused more damage to my body and to my brain. I broke my nose. I broke my glasses and I can't see.
And that right there was the first step in his recovery. Today, Jack is a certified addiction counselor with Denver County Courts, where up to 85% of people in the system already have a brain injury, and the vast majority are undiagnosed.
Our brain injury is an explanation. It's not an excuse. I'm not responsible for this, but I am responsible for my recovery. So I help a lot of survivors get to know their brain injury, just like I've had to get to know my brain injury, and then get to know their symptoms.
Jack shares with us what he has learned about addiction, recovery, brain injury, and even relapse. He encourages you to reach out when you are in need. Sometimes the hardest part is taking that very first step. September is Recovery Awareness Month across the nation. If you are struggling with a brain injury, addiction, or with both, contact BIAC online at biacolorado.org. That's biacolorado.org. Welcome back. It's Phil Lindemann, your host here on TBI, Talking Brain Injury, the BIAC podcast from Brain Injury Association Colorado. It's good to be back. And today I'm joined over Zoom by Jack. Jack, go ahead, introduce yourself. Where are you coming from?
Hello, everyone. My name's Jack Storti. I'm here from Colorado. I currently work with the Denver County Court, and I used to be an employee over at the Brain Injury Alliance, now the Brain Injury Association of Colorado.
And I ran into you last year at the Pikes Peak Challenge, that huge fundraiser that BIAC does every year. You were out there at O-Dark 30, checking people in, doing that, working a long day.
Yeah, working a long day, but completely worth it. I love Pikes Peak Challenge. As a survivor myself, I know how important the Brain Injury Association of Colorado is, and that hike, that adventure, choose your own challenge. I mean, it speaks to exactly what the Brain Injury Association is, you know, like meet people where they're at, and it all goes to a good cause so that we can thrive as a community of brain injury survivors.
Yeah, that's the truth. And another successful year at the Pikes Peak Challenge this year. Were you back out there again?
Absolutely. Yeah, this was my fourth year. And this year, just focused on being a volunteer. And it was really fun to make sure that, you know, in the background, the moving and fixings were arranged so that the show could go on. We experienced some intense weather up top. So it actually, the summit climb got canceled. Mm-hmm. But still, everybody was courageous and kept their energy up, did the half hike. And we're just as thrilled about it. So we're really grateful for everybody who still came out, even though there were some changes due to weather.
Yeah, any day out there in the woods with your community is a good day on earth, that's for sure.
And, true, yeah.
That event has been going on for so long, been doing so many great things. Now tell me, have you ever made the hike? Did you ever do the summit hike any of these years?
I have, yeah. The first year I participated, I did the hike, and I've also done one other 14er, Mount Democrat, and something unique that stood out to me about Pikes Peak is all the switchbacks. You think that you're almost there, like you can't see anything, but then you turn, and then there's another loop to do, and then you turn again, and you know, I think it really, to me, symbolizes a lot that I experience in life too, right? Like we hit these plateaus and it's like wondering what's next and does this mean we're done? And then you turn and there's something else that comes up. To me, that's really what being a survivor means too, right? We're just taking one day at a time, trying to tackle the task at hand and being open and willing for the future of what's next because the challenge is always there.
Yeah, one day at a time, one switchback at a time. And I think one of my favorite stories from last year when I went ahead and did the summit hike was I ran into a group of veterans and they were about halfway up the switchbacks. And the one guy was like, man, I can't go more than 10 steps without sitting down and feeling like I'm done. And his group was totally supportive of it. They were like, take your time. Man, it's two in the afternoon. We got, look, you can see the top. You can see the cog railway. We've only got 7 more switchbacks to go. But still, they were like, we're here with you every step of the way. Doesn't matter if you only go 10 steps at a time. We're going to stick with you.
Yep.
Yeah, it really is one of those cool events that, you know, I love what you said, that the trail itself is a good metaphor for what we are dealing with, well, every single day as survivors. September, though, is special for another reason. It is Addiction Awareness Month. And Jack, tell me a little bit about your connection to, well, Addiction Awareness Month and folks that are struggling with addiction, starting with your job now through the courts.
Yeah. September is Recovery Awareness Month.
Recovery Awareness Month.
And it actually starts on August 31st with National Overdose Awareness. And I am a survivor of brain injury as a result of multiple overdoses that happened in close succession of each other. Within a 3-month time span, I experienced 4 overdoses. And separately from that, some suicide attempts that, injured my brain from lack of oxygen and, of course, the toxicity of using drugs. Really grateful to be alive today. And, you know, that was 2009 when all of that was happening to me. And I'm so relieved and honestly, surprised that I am where I am today. I can't believe that I'm working in the system, the legal system, trying to make changes for other survivors who are experiencing the legal system, because my journey, I was really struggling with addiction, really struggling to stop, and that includes everything that comes with addiction, right? Doing stuff on the streets, getting myself in trouble with the law, and getting really lost in my life. So September as Recovery Month is observed, not just for substance use disorders, but also mental health, to celebrate the achievements in our recovery, and everybody's recovery pathways are different. And that, to me, it really speaks of recovery is possible. I didn't used to think that that was possible, but now we celebrate it. There's a massive recovery rally that's going to happen this week, this weekend, this Saturday, down in downtown Denver, and thousands of people who are in active recovery come out and just celebrate and shout at the top of their lungs, and they do a whole parade down the streets with cool signs. And when I was using and really struggling with substances, I thought that I was alone, and I thought that there wasn't anybody out there who wanted to stop using, or it was either you used and could control it, or you just didn't use and didn't exist. I really didn't believe that there was options out there for me, and there's a lot of options now, I've learned.
That's incredible. Now, Jack, if you don't mind, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your story, starting with, it could be your lowest of the low, but that moment that you made the turn in 2009 that you decided, I've got to get better.
Yeah. Honestly, I've had a lot of turns, but I'm lucky to be alive, in 2009, they were almost unable to resuscitate me during my last overdose. And I woke up in the hospital a few days later, and thankfully I had my parents there and they're supporting me. But I had a really unique thing happen. One of the paramedics who had revived me was there waiting for me to wake up, and he had a lot of questions for me. He asked, why are you doing this? What is going on? It turns out that he was a paramedic that had also assisted to revive me about 2 weeks later for a previous overdose. And I was just kind of dumbfounded. I didn't have answers for him. I didn't have answers for myself. But that night that he had revived me and, I almost didn't live, it was an accident. I was not actively trying to harm myself. I sort of wake up a few days later learning that, this catastrophic thing happened. I had seizures that caused more damage to my body and to my brain. I broke my nose. I broke my glasses and I can't see. I woke up at the lowest of the lows, and I have this stranger there who stayed and who cared. And he described for him, his experience was They had actually called me, meaning like they had called me as deceased at like a minute and a half, and he broke protocol and tried resuscitation one more time because he felt like he had to, like there was a higher power or something just like calling to him to do it again. And sure enough, he saved my life. And through that conversation with him and the support of my parents, I went from that hospital room to rehab, and my journey into recovery started.
And all this happened in Denver?
Yep, all happened in Denver. Okay. I've been curious to see if I could figure out who that paramedic was, and unfortunately, they keep that information confidential to protect paramedics and stuff. But I think about him all the time, and I'm really grateful. And who knows, maybe one day. But the thing is, like, I don't remember what he looked like. My memory's a little fuzzy from that time, and my glasses were broken. I couldn't see anything. But who knows? Maybe he'll hear this story on this podcast and be like, "Dang, I know that guy."
That would be pretty incredible to find. Well, the artist in the ambulance, you know, I think of that old Thrice song, you know, bringing people back to life. The paramedics, they really do an incredible job. And it's even more incredible that he decided to stick around and share his story with you, not only of the fact that, you know, something made him try harder with you, but that he had been there 2 weeks earlier. And Well, it's just pretty incredible to think that, you know, there's people out there that for a complete stranger will do what it takes. And these days it sounds like, well, as you started going through recovery, did you start finding that own drive in yourself, helping people you might never know survive and thrive through similar situations that you've been through?
Absolutely. I've always known since I was a little kid that I wanted to help people somehow. You know, like counselor, therapist, something. I come from a family who also has really struggled with addiction. And so as a young kid, I was like, maybe I could help people with this. And then I had to go through my own personal journey to figure out what it was like. But, you know, I sought some support. There's a lot of different types of free open community groups. There's also, you know, one-on-one counseling, there's group counseling, there's something for everybody out there. So I started seeking some help and built my own community. And I got into college to go be an addictions counselor. And, you know, that in itself was like to be of service to other people, but it was the intrinsic reward of, you know, If I help other people, I'm helping myself. I've always been told, like, when I still, you know, struggle with really dark thoughts and depression, and I'm not responsible for my injuries or my disease, but I am responsible for my recovery, which means I got to be honest when I have these dark thoughts. And I've been told that when I have dark thoughts or struggles, to get outside myself and help someone else, even if it's picking up the phone and, you know, all I can do is think about myself and I'm just like starting to have the downward spiral, call somebody up and just say, "Hey, Phil, what's going on in your day to day? How are you?" And that simple act, one, is an act of service to help other people to know that they're being thought of and that you care of them. And then it's also the intrinsic reward of pulling yourself out of yourself.
Yeah, it's powerful stuff. So I live in Summit County, and just the other day, I was talking to a member of our STAR team. They're the co-responder team. So like, say somebody has, you know, mental health crisis is what they deal with a lot of the time. And they send a clinician, so a counselor, along with a paramedic, and then also a deputy. And I was talking to the clinician about, you know, what she sees every single day. They go out on, you know, 5 to 10 calls a week where they are finding people at the absolute lowest, you know, at that point where they are nearly broken or broken. And she was saying, you know, sometimes it's incredible that somebody will, in that darkest moment, if you simply ask them, "How can I help? What can I do for you?" and ask them to share their story, she said that she's had strangers just bare it all to them 15 minutes after meeting them. And it's because sometimes that's all somebody needs, is for somebody to say, I want to listen to you, and I'm here to listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter how long it takes or, you know, what it is you're going to tell me. No judgment right here. I'm here for you. And Jack, as you were going through, you know, those early stages of recovery, how helpful was that to you, finding those people, you know, like that paramedic who were willing to sit back, listen, and, you know, give you that non-judgmental ear?
It was really, really helpful. And, you know, my part in it was to get really honest and admit what I was thinking and what I was feeling. I actually didn't know that I was a brain injury survivor until many years later. At that time in 2009, overdose was not being discussed as a type of brain injury, but there's two types of brain injury. There's traumatic brain injury, which is an external injury like a tree branch falling on someone's head. Or there's internal, non-traumatic brain injury, still traumatic to the person. It just means not something from the outside. And you know, that's like the brain's being hurt from the inside out, loss of oxygen, similar to a stroke, loss of blood. And my journey, the earlier years, after all these compound injuries that I had, I felt like a different person. My personality was changed. Not only was I navigating just being lost, like in life and struggling with like what is sobriety and being clean from substances, but like I didn't know if I liked the same hobbies anymore. You know, I remember my brother mentioning to me that I was behaving differently, acting differently. He felt like he didn't know me, which made me kind of embarrassed, and it also made me angry. I had a lot of anger my first few years after those injuries. I struggled like with impulsivity. I would break stuff all the time. I would throw things. It's kind of wild to think about because I don't have those same struggles anymore. Like my symptoms of my brain injury have changed over the years. So like my support system and the professionals that I meet with, I have to maintain my openness and my honesty so that then I'm getting the support of what I need today, because today looks different than yesterday and likely tomorrow is going to look different than today. You know, some of the things I struggle with now is like severe dizziness and migraines. I lose my words sometimes, and that causes a lot of frustration, and or like I'll have a word and I really mean to say it, but I say another word and it I can like feel it in my head. I don't know how to describe it. The way I started to learn is, honestly, I got into the legal system, and I was on probation at the time, and I got some assessments, and they actually were having a really hard time. They're like, we don't know if this is mental health. We don't know if this is substance misuse. And that went on actually for a few years for me. It wasn't until later, like much later, 2022, 3 years ago, I learned that I was a brain injury survivor. And it was like all the puzzle pieces came together from my picture. It was through the Brain Injury Alliance of Colorado that these conversations of non-traumatic internal brain injuries were happening, and there's this new screening tool, an updated OSU assessment, and I took it for myself, and it just made me cry. It felt like there was a sense of sadness, but there was also this sense of relief of like, I finally know what I've been going through for over 10 years. And then I started talking to my doctors about it, and my therapist, and my friends, and my family. And for my friends and my family, they're like, oh my gosh, that makes sense. It was also relieving for them. And then like through this awareness, we could take action. We started talking about like through the symptoms questionnaire, what different strategies I could do for myself, and also what strategies other people could do to help me. I'll pause there because I don't know if I'm getting off from your question.
No, I mean, it's incredible the road that you took to get there. I mean, over 10 years, over a decade to finally find that. But the whole time, like you said, you could feel that something was off, but maybe it was confusing to figure out what it was because there was so much change going on in life at the time too.
Yep. So much change at once. So it was confusing in that. And then when my life started settling down, right? Like I graduated college, I became a therapist, I started working in in-home therapy as an independent living skills trainer for brain injury survivors. And I started identifying with my clients. I was like, I know what it's like to suddenly forget something or like be disoriented, or like forget to eat, right? Like our brain and our stomach are connected, and like, oh, I need to eat, or oh, I need to hydrate. Like these simple things that a lot of people without brain injuries aren't aware that they have these incredible skills that their brain are doing automatically for them. I was like, yeah, I relate to having to put in all this extra effort to make sure that, like, I keep myself on track and that I function to the best of my ability. And it didn't used to be this hard to stay on track. And then getting into BIAC and starting to work not only with brain injury survivors, but brain injury survivors in the legal system, it felt like I had arrived, like everything was coming together. My personal and my professional lived experiences were locking in. And then I started learning more about myself. And I'm really, really grateful.
And I'm really fascinated too in, you know, how your experience fits into your job, what you're doing every single day with folks. TBI in the legal system. Now, I've talked to some lawyers who have said, you know, it can be very complicated, especially because, say, a car accident, right? Somebody is, you know, fighting a personal injury lawsuit, but they're dealing with a TBI at the exact same time. And then they're thrust into the legal system that is confusing to anybody. And they're still trying to make sense of it as they're recovering from, you know, a brain injury. So how do you help folks who might, you know, come to you, who are also dealing with a TBI at the same time? What are some tactics and some tricks that you've found help them navigate more comfortably and more effectively?
Well, you know, a mantra of mine is our brain injury is an explanation. It's not an excuse. I'm not responsible for this, but I am responsible for my recovery. So I help a lot of survivors get to know their brain injury, just like I've had to get to know my brain injury, and then get to know their symptoms. And symptoms are dynamic, meaning they're going to change day to day or sometimes even moment to moment. But finding ways to communicate that to the people around them and doing what they need to do for themselves. So that might be, a survivor saying, please stop talking. I need a moment to think, which is really vulnerable. That takes a level of courage to say, like, slow down. My brain needs to catch up, right? Finding whatever language resonates for us and feels most comfortable. And then also teaching that person who's hearing that of, oh, I need to give time and provide patience. So I work both with brain injury survivors in the system, but also the professionals. Not a lot of people know, it's a big thing right now is bringing awareness and education that in the legal system, around 80-85% of people in the legal system have brain injuries. Right now, and in my work with the Brain Injury Association, we were screening people who are going through court, right, for various different charges that they've gotten into. They've been to jail, they're having a really hard time. We screen them for brain injury, and they learn for the first time in their life that they're a brain injury survivor. So they started mirroring my story. So, you know, if around 85% of people in the legal system are learning, or I'm sorry, that are brain injury survivors, out of that 85% of people, about, again, another 80-85% of them are learning for the first time. So it's like we have to start from basics. We have to learn about our brain injury first. We have to have that awareness, and we have to practice acceptance, because we can't change our actions without some level of acceptance. And I say practice because there's some days that we don't want to accept the injury, maybe how it was caused to us, or the ramifications and the way that it's changed us, or the way that we feel that day. But if we don't accept, like, dang, I'm having a really bad brain injury day, then we can't do anything about it. We just sit in it. So a lot of what I do with survivors is like, hey, where are you today? What do we need to do together? You're not in this alone. This is what you can do. This is what I'll do. This is what we'll do together.
And I love what you said too about it's an explanation, but not an excuse. Yep. It still requires work. And I think that is, you know, that is one thing that talking to a lot of folks, especially on this podcast, a lot of people have gone through that exact same journey of being like, I don't want to deal with this. I wish it was never there. I don't want to have this new normal. But every last one of them said, you know, those feelings passed when they decided to, well, do what you said. Give themselves some grace. Give themselves some breathing room. Have those loved ones around them, the support system that also understands that, hey, guys, this is what I'm going to need today. It's not because I'm angry with you or I'm sick of you or I'm fed up with whatever. It's because, you know, I just need a little bit of time today. And then I'm going to get yes. back to it. Get back to doing the admittedly hard work of still recovering and still living with, well, the fact that, you know, I got a changed brain. You just gotta, it's great to remember that. Yeah. It's, there's nothing you can do about the brain now, but there's lots that you can do about yourself today and how you're, you know, moving through life.
I like how you said it. I've got a changed brain. You know, I don't mean to make it sound easy, 'cause it's not. And a commitment to recovery is a hard thing to do. And the daily tasks are difficult to do. And that's why we can't do it alone. So, and I know so many survivors who feel isolated and their family and their friends have distanced themselves because there's that big, maybe personality change or the journey has just been too rough. That doesn't mean that there's not a community out there for you. Right. And like, there's lots of support groups and ways to meet people. And, you know, we have to be a part of breaking down the stigma too. And that's why I think Recovery Month is so cool, because a big part of it is like, let's have some pride. We are survivors. We are walking the difficult path day by day, but we're still here. You know, two steps forward, one step back is still one step forward. And we're showing up for ourselves and for each other.
Yeah, tell me a little bit more about this parade, this celebration down in town, because honestly, I've never even been in Denver while it's happening.
Yeah, it's through the Advocates of Recovery. It happens every year. I'm going to look this up real quick and talk right to it. So
yeah, of course.
It's called the Denver Rally for Recovery. And this year is going to be hype. They're going to have like performing bands and, you know, food trucks, all kinds of stuff. They'll have a dance stage, a wellness area.
But like you said, it's through Advocates of Recovery, a group there in Denver.
Correct. Yep.
Now tell me about that group. Are you involved with them at all?
Yeah, quite a bit. I mean, they're a collective of many recovery groups. Like, so there's lots of different types of community groups that a lot of people don't know about. So a lot of people have heard of like Alcoholics Anonymous. That's a 12-step group. There's many other types of 12-step groups like Narcotics Anonymous, Methamphetamine Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, all kinds of stuff. But there's also things like Dharma Recovery. So it's like Buddhism and Taoism. So it's like a spiritual practice while talking about recovery and starting new every day. There's also like non-secular, non-spiritual groups that like SMART Recovery is one where they take the framework of SMART goals and lots of scientific research and have a model of how to set goals in your life and how to work towards them, keep them up, ask for help when needed, self-advocacy, a lot of cool stuff. There's also like the Phoenix Gym, a whole gym that all you got to do is show up clean and sober and you can show up for free. And they've got all kinds of different fitness groups and they're not just fitness. They've got like learn how to play guitar, learn how to play cello. They have art events and all kinds of stuff. So this recovery rally is like the biggest day of the year where recovery pathways from all walks of life come together just to say, I am here. Brain injury, substance misuse, mental health, because those three things, when people talk about the behavioral health system, they typically talk about it in a like binary, like, oh, it's just mental health or, oh, it's just substance use. But brain injury is in there too. So it's a trifecta. And we all come together and we just celebrate each other. And we're grateful to be alive and to have another day, even when we still feel lost and are working on finding our way.
I love that. And I think that's one reason why BIAC says it a lot. You know, there is something for everybody in BIAC and even outside of BIAC, like you said, for recovery. I know some people get nervous about like AA, a traditional, you know, program that's based in the church. But it doesn't have to be that. Like, don't let that scare you away from finding help that there, you know, dig a little bit deeper and odds are you're going to find a group that you didn't even know it was made for you, but it's made for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be clear, 12-step groups aren't like stuck in a church. They just focus on God and higher power. And there's all kinds of different versions of what that can mean. Another cool thing about like recovery groups is there's like all kinds. There's LGBTQ plus groups. There's people of color groups. There's like gender specific, like women's groups. There's this one recovery group called Tough as a Mother, and it's just for moms who are navigating mental health and substance misuse and trying to stay on track. Like, there really is a little bit of something for everybody out there.
I love it. And all it takes is just that first step. That first step of saying, I'm going to go out there and maybe be a little vulnerable. Find that group, find that community, find those people. Because my last question for you was, you know, as you were going through recovery, share with me maybe one time that you felt you were alone. Maybe that you, well, that there was not that community for you.
Yeah. I mean, right from the get-go, when I like was like, I need to change my life, but I don't know how. Like, I was surrounded by people living the fast life and, you know, using drugs and alcohol. And so it was like I had to change my people, places, and things. And that was terrifying. You know, it really sucked to go to jail, and it really sucked to be put on probation and have this like rocky road. And I think it was a lifesaver for me because through the legal system, they guided me of like, we want you to go try this. We want you to go try that. So they like, you know, like forced me to go explore stuff. And also like, I didn't know where to start. I didn't have anybody to turn to for that type of guided direction. So like something I try to tell myself that a mentor of mine says, he says, it's no longer about the why, it's about the how and what now. Like the whys of like, why am I having such a hard day? Or, you know, why is this happening to me? If I can get stuck there and overthink that a lot, but, you know, how am I going to get through this today? That's a better question to ask myself. Or so what's next? And I like to think of how as being honest, open-minded, and willing. Being honest with where I'm at, being open-minded to try new things, and be willing to like really put myself out there. And just real quick, another point of like loneliness that comes up for me is, you know, like I've had lapses in my recovery. I am not a recovery king. Perfection does not exist. Relapses happen, and that's really terrifying. And it has just been really important for me to like admit when a relapse happens, talk to people about it, and get back on the wagon, as they say, as soon as possible, or else like I will turn that snowball into an avalanche. And I know like substance misuse, struggling with using substances is really hard for brain injury survivors, because after our brains get injured, we struggle with impulsivity. It's our gas pedal and our brake pedal. How do we start something? How do we stop something? And so we can't always do that alone. We need our, you know, safe, supportive people in our lives to help us either get started with something or be like, hey, it's time to stop it. So, you know, we talked a lot about listening at the beginning of our conversation, and like, I have two ears and one mouth for a reason. And if somebody in my life that I trust says, hey, you're moving too fast, or hey, it's time to, you know, stop what you're doing, I really take that to heart these days, because I had some key people in my life when I was younger, before I had all the overdoses and trouble in my life, who really tried to help me slow down, and I didn't listen. So I really am grateful for the people in my life these days.
I can agree with that. And I would just add another important thing is that, you know, when somebody tells you you're doing good, you're looking good, something like that, celebrate that too. Because I've had folks tell me that exact same thing. They're like, wow, Phil, I think you're doing better than the last time I saw you. And I'm like, yeah, man, it's been 5 years since the last time I saw you. I hope I'm doing better. But it still stuck with me that, you know what? Hey, they noticed. And I'm happy because, I feel like I have been working hard at it. So, you know, appreciating when people, well, give you that honest, truthful feedback, know that it's coming from a place of, you know, they care about you.
Yeah. And like allowing yourself to absorb it because you deserve it. Like, we all deserve those good moments of confidence and compliments and the unconditional love and acceptance that comes from the people in our lives that we can trust.
Yeah, that's the truth. And of course, be good to yourself. Remember that you are worth it, whatever it is that you are doing to get better, whether it's injury or addiction, the path that you're sticking on to get better, it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm just going to plug it in right now of that BIAC, the Brain Injury Association of Colorado. They've got a huge, awesome clinical team that so that means they have a group of therapists who specialize in brain injury, mental health, and substance use. So anybody that's listening, if you related to my story today and you're like, I'm tired of doing this alone or I need some extra support, please reach out to BIAC. They've got some great therapists that can meet with you in person or virtually. They'll figure it out. And I'm really inspired by their specialty of being able to look at brain injury, mental health, and substance use all in the same time.
Definitely. And an incredible group with a reach that is statewide. Even if there's not a BIAC group right there in your town, reach out. They'll find a way to make it happen. I mean, up here in Summit County in the mountains, there's not a specific BIAC group, but I've been able to stay in touch with, mentors, mentees, people all over the state through it. And it's great. Jack, I really appreciate you making time to talk a little bit about, your experience with BIAC and recovery and where you are today. It sounds like a hell of a journey, but man, I'm glad that you're here.
Thank you so much, Phil. And thanks, everybody.
Yeah, it's good to have you here on TBI Talking Brain Injury, the Brain Injury Podcast from Brain Injury Association of Colorado.